Hi, this is Big Boss Man coming to you from the state prison for the criminally insane. I am currently enrolled in Miskatonic University. Go Pods! Now it's time to lock in and the lights out.
It is a center for higher learning. It is a place with centuries of secrets in its shadowed halls. This is where you have come to learn the mysteries of the cosmos. Welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast.
Brought to you by CryptoCurium.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast, Episode 31. This is the podcast dedicated to Call of Cthulhu and other horror and Lovecraft-related role-playing games. I'm Keeper Dan.
And I'm Keeper John. Welcome, everybody.
I'm Keeper Murph. Glad to have you here.
In this episode, we will be looking back at the influence that Robert E. Howard had on the Lovecraftian mythos.
And we're talking with author and president of Golden Goblin Press, Oscar Rios, and as a bonus, he's joining us for the whole episode as a guest host. Welcome, Oscar.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Thank you for having me. Really happy to be here.
Oh, we're glad to have you.
Absolutely. And as usual, we're going to start things off by going on into the campus crier.
Miskatonic University Campus Crier.
Campus Crier is Miskatonic U student paper. Here's where we're going to go through feedback for the podcast and news. And first up we have on the list is that Pellegrin Press released a whole bunch of cool new info, and including the new Ken Writes About Stuff topic has been released. Which this one is, it's not a mythos-based thing, because Ken is just sort of writing about any number of different topics. But he created up a martial arts supplement to add into Gumshoe.
Which is so pretty neat.
Yeah. And it's divided up by era. So he has different martial arts rules and styles that apply to different eras of play.
I'm sure the 20s martial arts is how to fight with your hat staying on, right?
Well, the image is actually of a woman in a period dress.
Yeah, looks Victorian.
Victorian dress fighting with her umbrella or parasol. So it's quite humorous.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yep. So if you're doing Trail of Cthulhu or Knights Black Agents, there's martial arts stuff in there for you. Another one of the items that was on the list is that Robin D. Laws has released an article called Talking at Yourself. And what that is a thing on tips of how to do, as the game master, how to do in NPC conversation back and forth, because those usually wind up being very awkward and lame.
Those are typically those moments where you avoid, you know, that you avoid like the plague, because the last thing you want to do is sound like an idiot talking to yourself in front of other people, you know?
Yeah.
So this offers some interesting, advice on how to either avoid that altogether, or if it must be done, what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually pretty good art. I say puppet show.
Bring
some puppets, put that keeper screen to a good use, and just kind of boink, and then have your hands talk to each other.
But see, I want to do it with those Balinese shadow puppets. That way it looks really cool, you know?
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking Mythos Muppets.
I would think that if you just have good inflection control, that would be a key factor in differentiating the roles. I hate accents. I never do accents. I usually solve most sort of things with inflection, but I'd love to get a look at what he had to offer on that.
Yeah, it's Robin DeLaws. It's worth reading regardless.
The other one is the they mentioned the Call of Chicago.
Yep.
Which is a sneak peek at their next little Mythos expeditions.
Yeah, Ken's basically putting together this is a Trail of Cthulhu game book of, it looked like there was like 8 different scenarios in there. There was a long list of them.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch.
Each one is this major expedition type of scenario. And so it's the preparations for it, the travel, the atmosphere, all that kind of a thing. And these, you know, even though, like, I personally don't really run Trail, and I'm perfectly happy using Call of Cthulhu, this is still useful for if you want to do an expedition type of scenario in your game. It's all story that you can just strip out and swap out the rules. The rules are the easy part.
Yeah, and there's some really good ideas in here, too. It's I don't know if anybody remembers, but we had mentioned in our 6-word adventure thing that we need to get back on, importing a bathysphere at one point. And one of these adventures actually has a bathysphere. It's called Lost on a Sea of Dreams by Adam Gauntlet. And they bring in a bathysphere to the Bermuda Triangle, and things go crazy from there.
Nice.
So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's not going to end well.
No. No. Just bathysphere and mythos together is a bad combo. But then you throw in, you know, the Bermuda Triangle, and things just get really, really bad.
Yeah. I believe Father Dagon usually...
in one shot.
Yeah. No lie.
Yeah. I think Father Dagon usually refers to those as jawbreakers.
That's
jawbreakers.
Oh, the cheesy
jokes. Or softballs if you're going with the Dagon with the big pillar from Unspeakable Oath.
Oh, man. Right, what's next?
Then Kevin Culp put together a brief document that prints out at just a little bit over one page of how to play Gumshoe. He basically breaks down the rule system in very simple explanation that if you're doing that game system for the first time, you hand out copies of this to your players, that takes care of all sorts of problems.
I need to read and study that, because Trail of Cthulhu is one of those games I really want to understand better and be able to game master and run. I'm excited by the whole investigative aspect of it, how it's supposedly more streamlined. But even though I'm super excited by it, the lessons that I'm learning or have learned out of what little experience I've had with Trail, I just apply that to regular Call of Cthulhu, and it's made my Call of Cthulhu games run that much better, you know?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's nice to have a simple breakdown. I think any game could benefit from this kind of a treatment.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Trail is really a simplistic rule set anyway, so it's a lot easier to pull that off, I think, with it than others.
Yeah.
I mean, you only have one dice, you know, a single D6, you're shooting for 4. It's not, you know, it's not nearly as complicated as it can be with Call of Cthulhu. And that's saying something, because that's not a hard system. BRP is not a hard system at all. So anyway.
Yeah. And
Oscar, have you run any Trail?
I have not. Much like you guys, I've wanted more exposure and education with the Gumshoe system. I did manage to get into one game at a not so local game store. I had to kind of drive for this, and I was super excited to drop in as a player, because I'm kind of dense when it comes to system. I love role playing games. I hate complex systems. So I was all for it. You know, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to learn this as I play it, because that would be fun and interesting. And when your keeper sits down and he's tells you right off the bat, yeah, I have no idea what I'm doing. I've never run this game before. We're just going to see how it goes, and I'm not really prepared. Yeah, this may not be the best learning experience of the Gumshoe system.
Right.
So I'm looking to repeat that at some point in a more productive way. But
you should try and sit in on one at a con or something.
Yeah. Well, usually at a con, I'm kind of running games. If I'm at a con, I'm kind of part of the
surely you're not of the you're con. Not busy.
I don't really get to go.
Surely you're not busy when you go to a convention, Oscar. That doesn't sound.
Oh, right, it's like, what do you mean? You're referring to my natural habitat? I love the cons. I mean, then you know, I run around for 3 days and then I collapse when I get home, but. You know, I love running games. I love, I love doing talks. I love doing seminars. But no, I'm definitely a con rat. Don't go as often as I would like to anymore. I'm a little busy, but I've got a couple coming up that I'm looking forward to.
Very cool.
Yeah, I assume you're going to be able to make it out to Necronomicon since it's right there in your neck of the woods.
Yes, I am lucky enough to be going to that. I'm really looking forward to that for a lot of reasons. I'm just, I know so many people, virtually that I've never met face to face, and this will be a good chance for me to meet some of them, face to face. And, it's always a thrill to, go to a new con. And as a Cthulhu nerd, I've never made the pilgrimage to Province. I've always meant to. It's been on my list.
Okay.
Next up, the H.P. Lovecraft Bronze Bust Project. There's a Kickstarter running to erect a life-size tribute to the iconic author in his hometown of Providence, Rhode Island. And that Kickstarter, which initially had a pledge goal of $30,000, it hit that goal in 48 hours. They've updated the Kickstarter and have a new funding goal of $40,000, and they're currently at $37,600. So, and they have 26 more days to go as of this recording. So I think they're going to cleanly hit that new updated goal and go beyond that as well. And I think there's a number of different, stretch goals and things with this. If I remember right, there's a bunch of different little statuettes, mostly statuettes that are available, t-shirts and things like that. So, but it's pretty cool. It's very, very
they're
cool.
Actually, you know, what's funny is they're actually at $37,600 right now. They just got a $1,000 donation. Sorry.
Oh my goodness.
I just noticed that while we're sitting on air. So that's kind of nuts.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So.
It also seems a little nuts that there hasn't already been a statue of Lovecraft put up somewhere in Providence.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what it was. By the way, the stretch goals for this are crazy. Brian Moore's got Paul Booth, the famous tattoo artist out of New York, known for his scary tattoos, I guess. that's what actually just sold, the $1,000 pledge for the Lovecraftian tattoo by Paul Booth.
My goodness. Wow. That's cool.
That's
first time I'd ever seen a tattoo done on a Kickstarter.
And then he has two different ones on here, too. He's got one from Paul Booth, and he's got another one, which is a artwork by Chet Czar, and then the tattoo by Tommy Lee Wintner, Wintner. There's too many consonants together right now. I don't know how to say it, but anyway. So I know that's another $1,000 pledge level.
And they're going to be erecting this bust at Necronomicon. So Oscar, you're going to get to witness this.
Yeah, that'll be really cool.
Yeah. Oh, they've got original Hellboy art by Mike Mignola. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, they've got, they have all sorts of stuff. Unfortunately, they're, and they got some really cool stretch goals, but they all start at about the $100 level and up.
Yeah. That's probably going to see if I can do like the $10 level and get a postcard with the copy of their poster on it.
Right.
That I think I can handle.
Yeah, I would love to be able to do the $250 Cthulhu Fagan package where they get you the 9-inch Brian Moore Cthulhu idol thing, but I just don't see that happening.
Yeah,
you can also get dinner with Stuart Gordon. Sorry, $600 level. You can have dinner with Stuart Gordon, director of Reanimator, From Beyond, Dagon, etc. But
that would be a fun conversation. Cool.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Are any of you guys heading out to Necronomicon?
Our missing co-host, Chad, is going to be out there.
Yeah.
I was really trying hard to get there, but I was not able to get housing to stay there. So every hotel in town is sold out. I went through, Airbnb to try and find people who let me sleep in their houses, and that didn't work out too well either. So, so right now it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to go.
So let me get this straight. You were willing to stay in a house on a budget in province for a conference.
Right.
And just sleep with strangers in that town, on the weekend of a Lovecraft convention. Yeah.
Correct.
That screams scenario. I've got dibs on writing that up.
I tell you what, Oscar, you can help.
Dead in 36 hours.
you can help write this scenario. You can help create it for actual life if you want to give me a couch, or a piece of floor in which to sleep.
Murph will larp it.
I will scare the shit out of some Providence.
I consider that, but I have a room, and I'm going away with it. I'm going to this with my wife and no kids. So no.
Oh, yeah, never mind.
No, this. Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm afraid of her.
Yeah. No, I'm married with kids myself. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. We don't get a lot of time, just the two of us, so.
Take that opportunity when it comes up.
So, yeah, if anybody out there wants to put Murph on a couch in Providence, please let me know. You can
start
reach
a Kickstarter for that. I need couch space. Sponsor me for couch space.
I've actually thought about it, but I was like, who in the hell would actually do that? But maybe I should. I don't know. I can't find anywhere to stay. I need sleeping
rooms.
Just
throw things against the wall and see what sticks.
Right. Just the spaghetti mess. Yeah, I might have to. Yeah, if anybody wants to put Murph in a couch on or a piece of floor in Providence during Necronomicon, please let me know very soon so that I can actually purchase a flight, which is not going to cost me too much. But just let me know, please. Thanks. Rant over.
On the line at cardboard box.
Right. I don't know. I could do cardboard box. There's a con. So you're going to be up 24/7 anyway, right? Maybe I don't even need a hotel. Maybe I just need a corner of the convention hall to
don't
pass
do
out.
I've run into guys who've done that. And by day two, they are ripe. And they're usually on in front of me.
Well, see, you got to go. That's you got to sleep there, but you got to go out to the Y and get a free shower or go to the gym or something.
But they don't. There's always that one guy.
Oh, well.
Every con needs a homeless guy.
I will gladly be that homeless guy. Just throwing that out there. Anyway.
The guys from the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast are, as of recording, 3 days away from finishing up their Kickstarter, and we're going to get a new podcast out of them.
A whole new one?
Yep. They have hit their stretch goal of 6,000. So we are going to be getting Chris and Chad Go Back to School.
Oh, my gosh.
They're going to start. Yep. They're going to do a whole new podcast, which in addition, that will cover the books that they made you read when you were in school.
Oh, cool.
So they may actually make them interesting and palatable.
Cliff Notes did a lot. Yeah. Oh, and when you're a teenager, none of that is palatable or interesting.
Yeah.
And hindsight makes that a lot better, I guess.
Yeah. I was already reading stuff like Dune, and then they threw Mice and Men at me, and I kept waiting for the characters to develop, and then it ended. And I basically was just sort of talking to the teacher about how badly written this book is.
That's funny.
I guess I was blessed. I had a lot of really good English teachers who threw out some really amazing stuff. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, 1984, you know, and Lord of the Flies.
Animal
One
Farm.
Of my favorites.
Yeah, I love Lord of the Flies.
Oh, Brave New World.
I love Brave New World.
You know, I mean, I had a lot of really good, I guess in looking back on the path of my life, it's not a big surprise that I had a lot of really good high school English teachers who put out some really interesting stuff. So I guess I was blessed in that respect. I don't really remember a lot of really bad high school books that I had to read, except that one teacher who made us read a lot of Faulkner. Oh, God.
Of Faulkner. Golly.
Yeah. You know, it might have been one book, but one book is a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot of Faulkner. A short story is a lot of Faulkner.
A postcard would be a lot of Faulkner.
No, I we had to read Lord Jim and Heart of Darkness, you know, by Joseph Conrad. And Conrad's known for making perfect, impeccable grammar, but his sentences could go for three pages and they would be correct, right? And so you would have this literal two or three page sentence where it was perfectly grammatically correct. And you're just like, oh my God, dude, shut up and just tell me how he kills this guy for God's sake. But yeah, so Lord Jim, Heart of Darkness is really bad about that too. But
a lot of those guys got paid by the word.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's cool. So they're going back to school. So that'd be
that
that'd
is
be
cool. Yep. That is cool. I love those guys. Their podcast is great.
Yeah. Anything so more they want to do, and they're going to start with Beowulf.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, next up, there's a. I just recently discovered this artist, and I wanted to put it out there. But there's an artist by the name of Jason Thompson, and his website is mockman.com. We'll have that linked in the show notes. But, man, you guys, I encourage everyone to go check out this guy's art. He illustrated the Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath, so he's got that available on his website, and he's got a poster, a full color poster of the Dreamlands map that he illustrated. That looks amazing.
Yeah, he's been doing a lot of Lovecraftian stuff. He's done Cats of Ulthar, they're doing the King of Sarnoth. I mean, a lot of stuff that are a lot of that's in the you know, the Dream Quest, but he's been really doing a lot of neat stuff.
Yeah, and if you go to his website and you just check out he's got a section of gallery section, and you can just kind of thumb through his mythos creatures. His version of Cthulhu is just really awesome and alien, and just everything is so cool. And this is an author or an artist that I think more people should be aware of. Just, I saw this and I was like, this is amazing. And I wanted to use this platform to put it out there. So check it out. Jason Thompson, mockman.com.
Excellent. Yeah, this is very cool stuff. Then, there's some other Kickstarter here. What was it? The Bronze Ogre or something? Yeah.
Yeah, Bronze Ogre. Something.
No, yeah, some little startup. These guys are all over the place.
Nobodies.
Yeah.
They're doing something called the Third Cthulhu Companion.
Yeah.
Oh, right. No, it's not Bronze Ogre. It's Golden Goblin Press. That's it.
Oh, that's it. That's right.
Yeah.
I might be a little familiar with those guys.
You might be familiar with those guys. Island of Ignorance, the Third Cthulhu Companion. This is going to be awesome.
We've been mentioning it, well, since last episode, I believe, with Brian and... This is, Oscar, you're doing quite well.
Yes.
You got $55 to go.
Oh, man, yeah. It's killing me.
Hang on. Wait. Let me log in and I'll buy the $55.
Keep in the air, folks.
I'm typing my password.
A week ago, for those of you listening.
Yeah.
All right, let's see.
We're closing in overnight, and I'm thinking, can I be fully funded by this show? And $55, I'm like, really? Come on.
$55.
It sounds like Marv is pushing you over the edge here. There's two different $50 rewards here.
Well, I need the local politician, right?
One is, local politician. Foreign correspondent is for overseas. I kind of boned that when I set it up. And it seemed like it was only available for North America. So I just added foreign correspondent for all of our good friends overseas.
And I'm confirming with Amazon.
So with that, you get a vote in the mystery scenario, which we're also really excited about.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea.
I am a backer for $55.
Okay, let me...
Let's see what it did. Oh, God.
Yep. I just refreshed it. 9,000 even.
Woo! Funded. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Boom, boom, boom.
That'll let all that anticipation go away.
Oh, this was wonderful. Now I've captured the moment where the project was fully funded. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That was pretty neat.
That was awesome.
It just happened to be there, and I need to fund this anyway, and there we go.
Well, I will be sending you a free unpublished scenario as a thank you.
Whoa.
I've got a lot of stuff. People think that I write a lot. Yeah, there's stuff I write and I don't even put out. So I write even more than people think. I've got some really cool, trippy stuff. We'll talk.
Oh, that's nice. I love that kind of stuff. So all better.
Yeah, I've got scenarios that I don't publish because I don't want to get firebombed.
Oh, dude, those are the ones we want. I'm telling you, I've got this theory, okay, and I've got a couple of guys with me who think that there's not dark enough stuff. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, see, now I have a company, and we're funding on Kickstarter, so now you don't really have to be afraid to publish the really dark stuff. Brian might have hinted at how creepy and dark his scenario is. I just did art assignments for it. It's pretty dark and creepy. We're at Golden Goblin. We're pushing for the darker, grittier nature of it. So yeah, we're looking to really push some boundaries and some buttons with this. Not in a sensational way, but just have the conversations that polite people are afraid to have, you know? I mean, there's a lot about the period. I mean, if we're going to stick to the classic period, there's a lot about the 20s and 30s that is just, you know, brutal. You have racism and sexism. You have, you know, organizations like the KKK. You have the Nazi movement in America. You have the eugenics movement. You know, it was not the happy, enlightened time that a lot of people want to paint it to be. There's a dark side to the period. And that's just, you know, that's just gold for horror material. So that's what we're looking to do. You know, those are the kind of stories we're looking to tell. You know, the more grounded in history, the more real. But of course, you know, with cosmic horror slipped in, into it. So we're really excited about the direction we're hoping to go.
Man, that is awesome.
Yeah, that should be really cool. I'm happy for that because I really like I like playing it dark. You know, I like to scare myself at times. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it'll be good to see that. I will bring up one last bit of news there. The Horror on the Orient Express Kickstarter just got in a new update yesterday where they released the advanced copies that they received of the Express Diaries from Innsmouth House, and they look awesome. This is by Nick Marsh. They have images on the update of the jacket, the dust jacket, the front of the book, the inside plate, which is a map, and then some of the full color posters, travel posters that are inside, and it looks really cool. So anybody who's watching that Kickstarter, there you go.
I think that people are going to be really surprised when it finally does come out. There's a lot of new stuff in it, and a lot of the old stuff has been reworked. Mark Morrison has really, I think, considered carefully the criticism of it. You know, it's a classic. Everyone loves it. Everyone wants it. Everyone has wanted it reprinted. But critics have considered it you know, not a perfect situation. You know, for lack of a better word, it's pretty much a railroad. There are scenarios that are very railroady on Horror on the Orient Express, and they've really made some serious effort to open up some of those scenarios. So even the scenarios people are familiar with aren't going to run the same way. So yeah, forget about the new stuff. The new stuff is awesome. You know, maybe not the stuff I wrote, but you know, the new stuff that I got to read that other people wrote is awesome. But the reworked scenarios are really going to surprise some people. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with working with those guys.
It seems like they've been having a lot of fun with it themselves. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they look like they're going crazy. Yeah, they look like they're having a lot of fun doing what they're doing. So hopefully it comes out soon and we can all enjoy it together. From
what I have heard, it's looking pretty good for a Gen Con release. It's looking pretty awesome. Solid. I know kind of where they are with it. And trust me, these guys, the Aussies are working. They're working hard to pull this together, the way it should be pulled together. From the last I heard, I'm supposed to be handed a copy of it between Gen Con and Necronomicon. So that will be awesome. Right before I leave for Necronomicon, the plan is to be handed a copy of the box set by Mark Morrison himself when he visits New York on his way to Necronomicon.
Wow.
So yeah, it's going to be a banner weekend at Golden Goblin Press. I'll get to meet one of the founding fathers of the genre I love, who I now can proudly say that I've worked with. And then, you know, we're both going down to Necronomicon. So, yeah. Oh, and, you know, with Penelope Love, who, you know, again, these are people who wrote some of the stuff that made me love doing what I do. And now, you know, when you meet these guys and work with these guys, it's just, it's a nerd's dream come true. You know, I'm living the nerd dream.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool that they pulled Penelope back in for that. That was really a smart move on their end.
Yeah. I don't think I've read that one. I mean, they may have sent it to me. I've been a little busy.
Yeah, that's okay. It gives you something to look forward to going through. I love seeing the idea of an old campaign being given new life, because Call of Cthulhu is one of those very small handful of games that the scenarios really do have a following. Mm-hmm. And it not further than just having a scenario with a reputation. You know, D&D has a few scenarios that have a rep of, yeah, this is the one where you die within the first 5 feet of entering the place.
Temple of Elemental Evil.
Yeah.
Name that scenario.
Yeah.
Everyone dies 100 times in the first hour.
Yeah. But that's not necessarily people might, you know, have cool stories of going through that thing or trying to with their, I guess it would look like, you know, this cattle call line of characters at the entrance that eventually they'll just make it through. But, Call of Cthulhu is the only game I'm aware of that a scenario will have its own, almost like its own separate fan base. You know, you can have people who are just absolutely nuts about Masks or Orient Express or any of these other long-time scenarios that are just legendary in the industry.
And honestly, it doesn't even have to be a campaign. There are amazing individual scenarios that people are just, you know, totally in love with, like mm-hmm. famous, like their favorite film.
Yeah.
You know, I know I have a few. I mean, a lot of them tend to be Haster-centric, but, you know, Have You Seen the Yellow Sign by Kevin Ross and Tatterdemalion by Richard Watts. Those are two that just, you know, I could run those, you know, over and over and, just read them as fiction. I mean, they're just beautifully and well written. And then there's a few that I refuse to read because I know they're really good by reputation and I want to play them eventually. And if I read them, I won't be able to. So there's like four or five classic scenarios that I refuse to expose myself to just because I want to play them. I think Fade to Gray by Scott and David Anielowski is one of those. Mm-hmm. And now I know Scott David Anielowski, and I've gotten him to promise to run it for me one day. So I'm never reading that.
Nice.
If he's on his deathbed, I will show up with a copy, a keeper screen, and some dice and say, dude, you promised.
and a defibrillator.
Yeah.
Tank maybe of two, oxygen.
One for each of us. I hear it's a classic, and I'm just, you know. But yeah, even individual scenarios can have a rabid fan base. Very passionate fan base.
And with other games, there's the whole stigma of, oh, if you run something that's out of a published game, well, that means you're lazy at your job as a game master. Call of Cthulhu doesn't have that. And no. I love that about it. You know, you can have a published adventure that will never be run the same way twice, even if you have the same players. It's just, there's no way that it's ever going to feel lazy because people take it in all sorts of weird directions.
Mm-hmm. One blown dice roll. You can even try and do the exact same things, you know, and it's never going to turn out the exact same way, you know, which is weird that that Call of Cthulhu does have a level of replayability.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, how many times have we all played The Haunting or,
right.
You know what I mean? It seems like everybody plays that one multiple times.
It's almost a rite of passage for Cthulhu investigators.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Of course, it's also hated by a lot of people, too.
That I don't get. That I just don't get. I love every single take on a haunted house. I've written a few haunted house scenarios. I've played I've ran a whole lot of other people's haunted house scenarios. It's always a hoot. It's a classic. They call these things classic for a reason, because they're awesome.
Well, and to spin into something else we've got here, we also love listening to people play Call of Cthulhu, and we actually, Miskatonic University podcast, we have a new iTunes feed just for the live plays. And so we just got that launched, and I think we have our entire back catalog of our live plays in it already. Is that right, Dan?
Yep. That is correct.
And we have a new original recording for that queuing up soon, provided by Mr. Oscar Rios himself.
Yes, that was a lot of fun. I'd never done that before. So, and we had a great group of players from the College of Staten Island Gaming Club that I ran out there.
Yeah, I've listened to it already. I thought it was great. Great scenario, well run, and just a good group of folks that it was clear they were having a good time. So that was great.
Yeah, that's one of my reactive games where I just make a scenario, make a situation, and it's up to them to solve it. So after I set up, I just sit back and react to whatever kooky stuff they do. And I think that it went great. There was a lot of good problem solving and stuff going on.
Very nice.
Yeah, they had some very interesting and original ways to handle the situations you were throwing at them. And just now, I published it, so it is now live on the exclusive feed.
Yeah, that's one of my unpublished ones that I was mentioning earlier.
I have to listen to that
because it's a bit of a kooky concept.
Yeah, it was definitely unusual, and I think that just made it all the more entertaining.
It did.
Well, don't ruin it for me. I'm going to listen to it.
we won't ruin a thing. It'll be good. Right. But that feed is going to have Oscar's episode, which is titled Life After Death. That's live out there on the feed now. As you're hearing this episode, you can go download that. And we have other games that are coming up. There's a Delta Green game run by Eddie Poe. Dan, you've got some of your Miskatonic Area Paranormal Society, your MAPS games. Those are coming up.
Yep.
And then, Murph, are we going to release the one that you did, it was a Dreamlands episode. We're going to release that through this feed too, right?
Well, I haven't done a Dreamlands one there, John.
I thought you were, I thought, I thought you played in the Dreamlands recently.
Mm-mm.
Oh.
You ran the Dreamlands.
No. Yeah. That was a playtest. We're not going to publish. I thought you just finished one that touched on the Dreamlands. I guess not. Was it World War II?
No.
Well, we did World War One.
What did you just play?
I did that Delta Green game.
Delta Green. That's I knew
the one something. With Eddie Poe there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's your game.
Yeah. Oh, I was okay. in that game.
All right. I thought.
Yeah, he was in fact, player.
I edited it up.
Yeah, I thought your name would have been in the notes there.
No, it's right. too easy. We like to keep you guessing.
Very good.
No, that Delta Green game was a lot of fun too because we had some horrible dice rolls. Yeah, we played last things last, which is kind of like the rite of passage for Delta Green, you know, and just absolutely atrocious dice rolls. None of us could pass anything, and it made that scenario really kind of interesting for Eddie Poe because he was trying to, you know, get us to a certain location and we couldn't get any of the hints that would get us there. So it made it really interesting. But at the same time, there's a real nice twist at the end. So,
sometimes a group of blown dice rolls make for some of the most memorable epic Cthulhu stories.
Yeah.
Well,
then it's blown dice rolls and cold-hearted bastards. That's what made this game all the better. There's a couple of them in this game. So,
Can I just share one quick anecdote from a group of five?
Of
Lone Please. Dice rolls. Oh, I have a God. Scenario that I wrote called Halloween Candy. It's in one of the Cthulhu Halloween monographs.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one. That probably made me sound like a douche, but anyway. You have a whole bunch of children who eat tainted Halloween candy and become zombies. So nice. We have the whole group. The whole group are like Homeland Security agents and you know, federal people trying to stop this, you know, a secret shadowy government organization, which would have been Delta Green had I ever been able to afford the book on eBay, which I still haven't gotten. So it was kind of like, you know, anyway.
You can print on demand now. I mean, so.
Yeah, I'm lazy.
I know.
And I'm busy now. So the kids, the agents are up against this little zombie kid in a Batman costume. Because all the kids, they were trick-or-treating, they got tainted candy, so these little zombie children are all in Halloween costumes. So they're all like Homeland Security agents, and they're all shooting at this little zombie kid. And, you know, automatics, they have multiple shots per round. First person fires two or three times, misses, and down the line. Two misses, three misses, two misses, three misses. They get through their entire combat round. The zombie child is not hit once. I mean, it was just horrendous dice rolling. And then one of the players goes, I can't believe we fired 18 shots at this kid and nobody hit. And then one
Sounds
player
like real
goes,
life.
One player goes, well, he's Batman. Oh,
That's
my
classic.
God. There are moments in gaming you will remember the rest of your life. Well, he's Batman is one of them in my group, in my game. And that was at a, you know, that was like, that was at a con. These were even people I didn't know. It was just glorious.
That's awesome. That's exactly what I was thinking at the time too. It's like, well, he is Batman.
Well, he is Batman. And
so, brilliant. And we've got the new RSS/iTunes feed up on the site. You'll find the links for that over on the homepage for the site. Go over to the right-hand side on the menu there, and you'll see different, you know, like four different buttons for the main show feed and then also the live play feed. So no more live plays on the main feed, so sign up for the second one too. That way I can mark the live play feed as explicit and just leave it at that. And we've got a new sponsor that pitched in to help us out with the show, New Orleans Mythos. Thank you very much. It's one of our many forum members over there that's I'm just loving all the progress that you know, the forum is taking on. We got many cool conversations going on and a lot of games being set up.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah, we've kind of gotten into that now, I guess. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a forum, using the forum, New Orleans Mythos?
No.
He's a for the MU podcast. Yeah. New Orleans Mythos is a person on the forum.
Oh, sorry.
It's all good.
And basically, we've got things going on there, like Envision is setting up a game for people who've never actually played Cthulhu yet, and it's exclusively for them.
That's great.
Yeah, love that idea. Yeah, we've got lots of different games being set up on there, so that it just makes me happy to see it used in that way.
Intro games are great. They, you know, I mean, I think you have to write an intro game. I think it's unfair to just throw new players into something a little bit, a little bit hardcore. I like the creepy softball scenarios for new players and for new investigators, really. Having a game specifically aimed at new players, I think, is a great way to not burn them out. You know, you don't want people's first experience to be a negative one.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's something that Brian mentioned last episode, is that they've got a whole book coming out just for that kind of thing.
One of
players
the
innkeepers.
One of the three initial scenarios for Island of Ignorance is one of those games. The one that I've written, Lonely Point Lighthouse, is it doesn't need to be an intro game, but I think it's an ideal intro game.
Excellent.
It's a good slow boil investigation with a lot of creepy, moody stuff going on. So I think that I've run it for people who've never played, and they've had a great time. So
very cool.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
Have you a real love of books and learning? You do? That's good.
And this week's hidden online resource for keepers is the World War I propaganda postcards website.
That seems very cool.
Yeah, this is something I came across on accident, and it just seemed too cool not to mention. They basically have a breakdown of a whole bunch of different World War I postcards from different countries covering different topics, from the warfare to individual countries to the breakdown of the Lusitania, the Sarajevo murders, Mata Hari. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. There's postcards for everything. Evidently, postcards was the medium of choice for this kind of sort of thing. So anyway, it's a very interesting site, and it's pretty cool to look at.
And there very well might be things that somebody can adapt to for use in their game. Background, yeah. Or possibly even a strange props. Little story hook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even props, even. They would be pretty cool as props. You could print these out really easy. And they're all, pre-23, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, yeah. I was just going through the site, and there's, on the left menu, there's the one that says War in the Air. So I clicked on that, and there's a postcard that's in a vertical portrait orientation, and it's World War I air war, and you see guys in an open cockpit, just the pilots are there in the air firing their pistols at another plane up above them, and the plane above them, those guys have their pistols and they're shooting down at this plane, so they're not even using their mounted machine guns. They're just firing handguns at each other as they fly through the air.
Well, if you don't have a good angle, just use whatever you've got.
Those weren't the most maneuverable planes in the world. I mean, you were lucky to stay aloft, so you did what you had to.
Very cool.
That's a great image, though.
But they also have a bunch of, I like the ones with the Zeppelin attacks, because they have some images in there, and then they have some actual photos and stuff. And it's really disturbing to see these huge Zeppelins like falling to the ground and exploding and people running in terror. It's great.
Very cool. Man, these are neat.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, they got a lot of really neat images and photos on this. And so anyway, I thought this would be really cool.
Great artwork.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun stuff here.
Very cool. Good resource.
Thank you. Move on.
Now we've got a word from our sponsor.
Hello? What? Oh, he did what? Are you sure? How come it always falls on my shoulders? I know I'm his advisor, but honestly... No, well... Look, Jimmy's here now. Let me speak with you later about it. So, you managed to single-handedly create the largest Cthulhu cult the Northeast has seen in about 100 years. Not only that, but you supplied most of the student body, with countless others, with an accurate and cheap reproduction of the Cthulhu idol found by LaGrasse. Well, go ahead. Tell me what happened.
I didn't mean to, Professor. I found this amazing artist, Jason McKittrick from Cryptocurium.com. We sent a couple of emails back and forth, and I might have offered him the LaGrasse idol for a personal reproduction. And a clay tablet or two from the restricted portion of the Pickman Institute. Was that all? I may have sent him some of my notes from the Necronomicon also.
Oh, dear, Jimmy.
I really didn't know he would mass-produce them. And I had no idea that he was going to send the pages out with the orders he received.
Jimmy, if your father wasn't on the Board of Regents, I'm certain that the school would have killed you by now.
Sorry to bother you, sir, but there is a rather large group of people outside who are calling for the High Priest. What should I tell them?
But Chancellor Kramer is out of the country on... Oh dear, Jimmy.
I don't understand. What's going on?
Well, it seems that the Chancellor has been deposed, Jimmy. By you.
What?
Come on, Jimmy. We have to go and tend to your flock.
Miss Taylor, will you call the university housing director and have him send us a dozen or so expendable freshmen and book Whateley Hall for the next few hours, please?
Jimmy, here, put this robe on and take this dagger. This is likely to get quite a bit messy.
Settle down now, class. It's time for your next lesson.
Now we're just going to have some conversation about Robert E. Howard, what he's done as far as horror and Cthulhu mythos type stories. You know, personally, I've only read a few Conan stories, so I haven't even been exposed to any of his actual mythos type stuff.
You do not know what you are missing.
It's some fun stuff. It really is.
Yeah, I need to see if I can find any of that in audio form, because I have no time to read text anymore.
There's actually there's some LibriVox recordings of most of these that you can download. Ooh. So I know there's one at least for the Black Stone, and that's the one you probably should start with.
That's the first mythos story I ever really read. That was where it started for me with the Black Stone.
No kidding.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I actually came to the mythos through R.E. Howard, not H.P. Lovecraft. I actually found Lovecraft through Howard. So
crazy.
And it probably influenced my whole view of the mythos since then. But yeah, I mean, there's a book out from the 80s, The Mythos and Kindred Horror. That's a collection of Howard stuff, and that was the first book I ever picked up with, you know, focusing on cosmic horror, and I've never looked back.
Well, yeah, tell us what other stories drew you in.
The Black Stone was a huge one. I like some of his more ancient stuff. He's got some stuff set in Hyperborea where, you know, basically you're dealing with the mythos history as it's happening, or his take on the mythos history. There's a great story. I don't want to get the the title wrong. I think it's called The Fires of Something.
It's the Fire of Ashurbanipal.
Right. I mean, that one, I love it because it's got knife-wielding cultists, running gun battles, people with rifles, and it's pulpy as all living hell. But it's not dopey. It's like you never got the impression that these guys were just action heroes who were unbeatable. You got the feeling that these were tough guys who were probably in over their head. And I think that that's the essence of good pulp cosmic horror. That, yeah, these guys are badass, but, you know, they still, I mean, it's the mythos. You can be as badass as you want. That rifle's not going to really do much good. So it was pulp, but it was pulp with still a sense of hopelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think that if you had to define Howard's take on the mythos, that would probably be it. Pulp with a side of hopelessness. So you can run around and be a badass, and it's still not going to make any difference, but at least when you do go down, it'll be a surprise because, you know, you're a badass, you're supposed to be better than this. But no, you're not. It's the mythos. No one gets out alive, or at least whole.
Right. Definitely. That really does define a lot of Call of Cthulhu gaming, too. Yeah, I recently read Pigeons from Hell. And while that doesn't have a lot of pulp in it, it is an amazing mythos story. You know, and I mean, it's another one of those stories where he created, you know, he added a new aspect. It's a version of voodooism, but the creep factor in that story and the way that he brings across the atmosphere when the characters are encountering the horror, it was great. That was just one of the best creepy stories that I've read in a long time.
Yeah, the Black Stone has a creep moment that I've never really kind of gotten over it. And it's just someone observing the cultists about to perform a sacrifice.
Yeah.
And I think they pull an infant, like a newborn, out of a basket, and they hold it by the ankles. And I remember reading this, and I'm thinking, oh my God! I mean, it was just so... you're reading it and you have a visceral feeling of dread as you're reading it. You're so just the concept, you know, of it, that he would go there, you know, okay, we're going to bash this little infant's child head against this stone monolith. I read that and I was never, you know, I was never the same.
The cool part about that part is, you know, he takes, I shouldn't say it's cool. Okay, they sacrificed the first.
We're all going to hell.
I know, right?
The part that makes me so hungry.
They sacrificed the baby, and then they sacrificed the little girl.
Oh,
and then the narrator faints like a homage to Lovecraft.
right before he thinks, there's a mist, and there's a shape, and he it's like he passes out right before. It's like, okay, I've had enough.
Right.
He basically just punches out. His mind says, okay, we've had enough. We're going to sleep now because it's about to get worse. As bad as it is, it's about to get so much worse. And as a reader, you're both disappointed and relieved because it's so horrible up to that point. And you know it's getting about to get worse. So, again, there's the mythos horror of it, you know.
Awesome. Oh, man. And what story... Did you mine for the title of your company?
That is actually a quote from H.P. Lovecraft's The Call of Cthulhu.
For Golden Goblin? I thought that came from Robert E. Howard.
No, for Island of Ignorance. Were you asking the title of the project or the company?
The company.
Oh, I'm sorry. Golden Goblin Press is a Howard creation of a New York-based publishing company that number one is named after a Native American idol that the found that the two brothers who ran the company had. And for some reason, this company decided it would be a good idea to put out print versions of books like Unspeakable Cults, and basically they're doing print runs of mythos tomes.
We should mention that that's actually in the Black Stone that we were just talking about.
Yes, that's in the So yeah, that's not going to end well. What madness would possess a publishing company to actually do print runs of these books? Have you read these books? Which always stuck. Like, what were these guys thinking? And I'm thinking, well, the company's named after a golden goblin idol, so maybe they're not really doing too much thinking at this point. And it always stuck with me. I mean, my first mythos love was the Black Stone. I came to cosmic horror through Howard. And I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised, still living in New York. So that Howard created a New York publishing company that put out mythos tomes, it was kind of a no-brainer for what I was going to name my company when I got my license from Chaosium.
Very cool. That does make sense, yeah.
Yeah, having a company that actually has an in-universe feel to it has just a lovely, weird creepiness thing going on. That's excellent.
Yeah, there's something synergistic about it.
Yes.
To fall in love with the mythos reading a story that mentions Golden Goblin Press, and then, you know, a number of years later to be in charge of a company putting out, you know, cosmic horror stuff named Golden Goblin Press. It just feels right. And again, that's probably not a good thing.
Well, it's but not it quite does, as bad as bashing the baby's skull.
Yeah, the best part was when they killed the little girl.
Hopefully your company meetings and such are a little more friendly.
Luckily, we're all spread out. Most of our meetings are online. We've got people working in Australia. We've got people working in Germany. We're spread out across North America. So, I mean, we've got some good people, and we're everywhere. Like the Cthulhu cult, we're everywhere.
Yes.
That's the beauty of the internet. You can run an international company off of your laptop.
And you've even created the goblin itself, or had it created.
Yeah, it's done. We've got the finished photo of the first goblin on the Kickstarter page now. That was just...
I know, I'm looking at him. It's just amazing. Joe really knocked that one out of the park.
It is amazing work. He actually... Well, I'd purchased his Shub-Niggurath figurine several years ago.
That's an awesome figurine, isn't it? Sorry.
Oh, I love that one.
Jumping in there.
Yeah. And when I was speaking to a lot of people about setting up the Kickstarter, they were saying, you know, you don't have anything really super amazingly cool for that guy with just a buttload of money and who really wants to get behind you. You need something sensational. And I was like, well, we did briefly think about having somebody create a golden goblin idol, but, you know, it was just so kind of crazy and out there. And they were like, no, crazy and out there is what you really need to do. So I was like, yeah, you know, let me throw this against the wall, see if it sticks. So I still had Joe's email, sent him the letter, and I'm thinking, he's never going to go for this. And he was like, wow, that sounds really cool. And he was just completely into the idea of creating the Golden Goblin. And funny enough, he had told me he was recently thinking about doing something Howard-centric, that it was on his to-do list for one of the next projects. So again, kind of weird that it all falls together that way.
Nice.
And really made the project his own. It started saying, you know, I've got like three or four other things. I don't know when I'm going to get to it. And then 2 days later, I get an email. Okay, I started, and here's some pictures. And then You know, and a half later, I get an email. Yeah, I took a vacation day off of work and I finished it. And I'm like, dude, you're awesome. And then he was like, yeah, you know, I was watching some TV and I decided to just kind of doodle sculpt, I guess. And I created these golden goblin amulets. And I'm like, dude, you're awesome. Yeah.
Joe's so awesome, man. He'll just keep going and going and going.
You dream about getting people on your team that will make your dream their own. And I think that he really has. He's kind of picked up the torch and just run with what we're trying to do here. And I'm just so thrilled to have him involved. I mean, it's a beautiful figurine. And there are only going to be 12 offered to the public. And he was fine with that. We wanted to make it something special, something very limited.
Is that Joe's pendants as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was not part of the original discussion. That was just something, hey, I felt like doodling, and what do you think? And I'm like, dude, that's awesome. Yeah, that was the pendants were all his idea.
Those are amazing.
Yeah, they are. They are. I really can't wait to get a hold of them.
I've got a couple of his other pendants as well, and they're pretty cool. He cast pewter, which surprises me. Just because he usually works in resin. So I was kind of surprised to see pewter, but it comes out really nice. I have an elder sign in pewter, and it's quite nice.
Well, I think that you'll be getting one through this. I think you back to a level where you're actually getting one of the resin ones as part of your package.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Local politician.
Yep, local politician. You get one of the resin cast pendants as part of your backing. So you'll have another one of his beautiful pendants.
Awesome.
You want to bump that up to 100, you get one in pewter.
I'll just call Joe.
Well, you know, you did put us over the top, so I think I can upgrade you to pewter. And I'll still throw in the scenario.
Oh, I'm getting all tingly. Places I shouldn't be.
It's okay. We've already established we're all going to hell.
Yeah. That's right. You can
this
release.
Show's been railroaded, so it's That's fine. Right.
You can release the tourniquet now. That's all right.
just go with it.
I don't want to do that. Really don't want to do that. Yeah. So okay. We got to ask you some real questions.
Shoot.
What's coming after?
Oh, I am actually ready to announce what my second project is going to be.
Yay.
If you guys are ready for this.
Hit us.
When I was working with Miskatonic River Press, we had the idea of following up Tales of the Sleepless City, which has just come out from MRP, with a second book of scenarios set in New Orleans called Tales of the Crescent City.
Oh.
Excellent. I like where this is going.
Most of that book is written. And that is going to be Golden Goblin Press's next project. I'm happy to say that we have a scenario from Dan Harms. We have a scenario, of course, from me, because that's kind of what I do.
Yeah.
and I am thrilled to say that we have a finished scenario by Stuart Boone.
Oh, man.
Cool.
And I've run it.
Oh.
And it was awesome. And here's the, we have a scenario from, C. Michael Hurst, who's also in the New York book. And what I'm most happy to share with everyone is I have secured a sequel to be written by Kevin Ross, a follow up to his classic, Have You Seen the Yellow Sign?
Wow.
What I consider the quintessential New Orleans adventure, one of the best Haster scenarios ever written. He's writing a sequel for this.
An official sequel.
An official sequel to Have You Seen the Yellow Sign by the author himself, Kevin Ross. One of the, what we like to call the great old ones of the Call of Cthulhu game. There's a lot of really great new authors, but then there are these guys who made the game what it is.
Yeah.
And guys like me call guys like them. Those are the great old ones. And whenever you can get one of these guys to sit down and make something new, it's just a joy. It's just a rare thing. And I've been lucky, you know, to have made those contacts and to be in a position where I can say, look, the fans want this. The fans need this.
I want this. More than anything.
You need to write this. I want to run this. And there are probably 400 guys out there just like me who want this scenario. I don't care what you're doing. You should need, the universe needs this scenario. Actually, when I called him, I said, okay, this is me making my fast talk and persuade checks. And I just pitched him about how much, you know, what a demand this would be. And he basically said, okay, you've impaled your persuade check. And I was just, I'm like, oh, this is going to be just glorious. I have such great memories of running that scenario and the opportunity to have a sequel. As a fan, I'm just thrilled. You know, forget that it's going to be my company to put this out. Forget that I'll be like probably the second person to read it after him. Just as any fan, I'm thrilled to have him putting this together. And I've read some of the others. The other scenarios are really good. This is going to be a very interesting project. We've already secured our cover artist. We're going with Ruben again, who did our amazing cover for Island of Ignorance.
Love that cover.
So he's going to be our cover artist for the next one, and he's thrilled to be on. So I'm slowly gathering my team. My goal is to launch the Kickstarter for that within 6 weeks of Island of Ignorance getting into the hands of fans.
Cool.
We are already in soft pre-production for that project. So yeah, as soon as our first book is produced and being reviewed, we're launching the Kickstarter for the second.
Now, is everything on track for Island of Ignorance? I know things can go wrong and things can happen, and there's 22 days left.
Everything is very well on track. We have almost the entire initial book in-house. We're waiting on one article and one scenario, which, you know, they may hit my inbox at any time. The ones that are in-house, three of the four articles are already through editing and copy editing. One of the three scenarios is already through editing and is in the middle of copy editing. I've got to start reviewing that. My scenario is in the middle of rewrites. No, the book is completely on track. We're hoping to hit stretch goals and have more material, which will, you know, put us a little bit behind in a good way, but we're in a position to jump on those, to jump on that material as soon as it gets cleared through the stretch goals. Some of those are already written first draft. So no, we've got our ducks in a row so far.
Cool.
Yes, that's exciting. I'm particularly interested in the stretch goals. So yeah.
And we're already in art assignment. We've already got illustrations being finished. Yeah, I learned a lot at Miskatonic River Press. We're going to be keeping on top of this. You know, not my first trip to the rodeo. And the fans deserve someone to keep on top of things and keep the ball rolling. As a fan, I've been the victim of production delays many times, and I really don't want to put fans through that.
Agreed. I'm glad you're on board with that, because that can be the most frustrating thing about these Kickstarters.
Well, and you've established such a positive name in the industry. I don't think anybody's concerned. I think everyone is like, we already know what Oscar's reputation is, not only as a writer, but also as a publisher. And I think this is going to be great.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. You know, it is an honor to be in this industry, to produce things that fans are going to see. I mean, I'm a fan first. I got into this because I felt that I could contribute to an industry that I cared a lot about. You know, I thought that, I mean, I didn't always think, I'd been told you should start putting these out. I mean, what you're doing is really good. And it took me a long time to listen to those people, but it is an honor to entertain the fans. It's an honor to be part of this industry. And, you know, I, as a fan myself, I know what the fans deserve because I am one. and I want to produce those kind of products that the fans deserve. I want to get the products out in a timely fashion, you know, because that's what the fans deserve. And also, you know, just to have it all come together. You know, you can have a great manuscript and the art's just not there, or great manuscript and the art is there and the layout is bad, or, you know, you know, spelling errors. It's, you've got to get it all right, or as close to right as you can. It's a balancing act between taking the time to get the project, to put out something that you're proud of and get it as right as you can, but still get it out as in a timely fashion. So it's a lot of balls in the air, but, you know, it's a wonderful thing to be working on, and it's an honor to be doing it. And when it all comes together, it's just amazing. And things go wrong. You know, it's not a perfect universe. Things happen. But you plan for as many of those as you can, and you do the best, and, you know, you keep rolling.
So your next, the next stretch goal you got is, or the first stretch goal, I guess the first stretch goal you're going to reach at 9,500, which you should get with no problem, is the map interior art expansion.
Yes.
And that's, yes. That's basically just going to expand on the artwork inside the book. Is that?
Yes. Originally we hadn't really planned for every article to get art. We'd planned to have art and maps for the scenarios, but possibly not the articles. This way, every article will get at least one illustration. If it needs a map, it may get a map. Dan Harms' article on the where he came up with a very small, very dangerous Cthulhu cult, that may need a map. He's actually detailed a small cult hideout base. So now, if and when we reach that stretch goal, that's going to get a map, which we weren't originally going to do. But, you know, with the budget there, there's more that you can do. I mean, we've got great artists, and they're raring to go. It's just, how much can we budget? And that first stretch goal, we're going to be able to budget a lot more really cool art.
I think you're going to make that stretch goal. I mean, I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
I mean, you got 23 days left.
In 23 days, yeah.
I'm shooting for a few beyond that. Let's
I'm thinking that you better list stretch goal number 4 is what I'm thinking.
Let me go to... Yeah, we've actually got 9 stretch goals, and that may have been overly optimistic, yeah. But you got to aim high, you know?
Yeah. Well, I see a familiar name on one of these that it's like... What, a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh stretch goal, I think? That, apparently, listeners, if you want to see our dear Keeper John in another book, pledge. Yeah,
that's called
pledge the, back much.
The Back to New England stretch goal, which would be our fifth scenario.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually have enough material to double the size of the book, and our fifth scenario would be... Darkness Illuminated by one of your own. And I'm really hoping we reach that because it sounds like it's going to be amazing.
I'm super excited for that. And I need to thank Oscar for helping me come up with the title on that one because my titles were terrible.
They weren't that bad.
But,
a lot of people
yeah.
have trouble with titles. I'm kind of an idiot for savant with titles. For some reason, they just come pretty easy for me. I don't know why.
I'm kind of interested to see the Dweller in Darkness by Tyler or Trevlix on the forums. He's known as Trevlix. The one with the bug sash.
Yeah. Yeah. We have that one written. That one's in house. I have it. I've read it. That's going to be great. You know, I've always been fascinated by those great old ones who are just kind of out there. They're just not interested in humanity. They're just completely alien. And when you do connect with them, they're just going to blast you. And, you know, only the craziest people are even going to have anything to do with these things. Those have always fascinated me because they never get written about. There's never material about that class of great old one or outer god or whatever. And he's really given us some connection into that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was our Tyler. That's Trevlix. It's awesome.
Yeah, I actually roomed with him at Gen Con years ago, and we've been online buddies ever since.
Oh, that's
cool.
We got roomed together at through Chaosium, and we've kind of been buds online ever since. And we've never really worked. We've never really found the right time or the right project to work together. And you know, now that I'm the boss, I'm like, hey, Tyler. He was one of the first people I called.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love seeing people that we know through the show pop up in projects like this. It just makes me happy. It's neat.
Yeah, there's some great people out there, and you know, they've got great things to say, and they've got a lot to add. And you know, they're just not enough companies putting out enough things for everyone to get. To get the time they really deserve. And I'm happy to give some of these people a platform.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, so do you think you're going to be able to make it to Gen Con this year?
No. Had to choose between Gen Con and Necronomicon.
Brian.
If you're a Cthulhu guy, it's not really much of a choice. You're going to go with where, you know, and again, I've never made the Mecca trip to Province, so it was a no-brainer of which I was going to do this year.
Now, yeah. I want to bring up again that I need a couch in Province.
I am going to Gen Con this year, so hopefully I'll be able to meet somebody I've talked to on this show. At this point, it sounds like I'm going to be the only Call of Cthulhu fan there.
I wouldn't say that. There are going to be a lot of Call of Cthulhu fans at Gen Con.
Well, yeah, I mean, Chaosium is going to be there, company. I think.
Yeah.
I think Horror is supposed to...
If nothing else, I can get lots of pictures of Horror and the Orient Express stuff to put up on the site and let people Mark show Morrison people.
And Penelope Love are going to be there.
Yeah, Penelope Love will be there.
Yeah, so... All right, so I'll just focus on Chaosium because everyone else has forsaken me to go to Necronomicon.
You picked a bad year to go to Gen Con. That's what it comes down to.
It's, you know, all the major cons are within, you know, 8 weeks of one another. It seems.
Yeah,
so
it does make it where people have to choose one over another.
Well, Oscar, we really appreciate you being on the show.
Oh, it was great being here. I had a blast.
We have anything
thank
else?
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else. It was so much fun talking to you, man. You're one of those names we always see cropping up everywhere in all the books. You know, all the books. And
every book.
I have no life.
You're in the Bible now, right?
Hmm?
You're in the Bible now.
Not the published books of the Bible. Maybe it's some of the hidden Vatican chapters that they're not letting out.
Yeah.
Vault. I write scenarios like alcoholics drink. I kind of can't pass a bar. If there's a project that I'm not invited to, I'm not above knocking on the door and saying, hey, got room for one more? I have nothing else to do with myself. And usually the editors are kind enough. It's like, oh, fine. Send us something. You know, we'll see how it all turns out. I'm working hard and I'm hopeful, and we'll see what the situation.
Well, we have our best hope out there for you, because I think the community will definitely support it.
Well, they have. I mean, we are fully funded, and we're hoping to do more. So we'll see. We still have a lot of Kickstarter campaign to get through, so I'm hopeful to see exactly how the rest of the project takes shape. Like you've said, we've got 9 stretch goals and I'm ready to reach them all and put out a just gigantic epic book for everyone. So we'll see. We'll see what the community wants us to do, and we will do it. We will deliver.
Yeah.
We'll do our best.
When this episode drops, it'll be just a hair over 2 weeks left in the Kickstarter.
Great.
And we're going to continue to let people know what you're doing and to just sort of keep everybody aware of the different stretch goals you hit and anything
wonderful
else that
really appreciate it.
Not a problem at all. Happy to help out. We love seeing new things come down the pike.
Yeah, as a fan, so do I. I love to see you know, what people are doing and putting out.
Yeah. I keep coming back to pictures of this goblin statue. He's just so cute.
I know.
Creepy.
I know.
Who did that initial artwork for your logo?
Let me find his name.
Because, I mean, it's clear that all the sculpture work that Joe is doing is based on that. I love how it matches so well.
Give me one second to try and find his name. One of a member of our production team, his day job is in marketing, and he got one of his, not marketing, design, graphic design. So, just bear with me.
Yeah, because the goblin being held in hand, that was Ruben, because he signed the picture.
Right.
But the little...
I managed to fall over on Ruben's DeviantArt page, and he's got a Dunwich family portrait of Wilbur Whatley's twin. It's so crazy.
Okay, his name is Dave Perillo, the guy who designed our logo. What's really cool about that is it started with the logo, and from there... Jeff Gillum, one of our creators of Horror on the Orient Express, who's also writing an article for us, he basically said, I'm free to do whatever you want. I can do an article, name a topic. I have a few ideas. And I said, can you do the history of the Golden Goblin Idol? Because, again, I was always fascinated by what the hell were these guys thinking, naming a company after this thing. And he said, I can do that. And he did some, and he wrote it. So we have an article on the Golden Goblin Idol. So he had some input on what the idol would look like. And he also found during research an illustration from I think 1944 issue of Weird Tales, where they did a short story called The Golden Goblins that had an illustration. So then we had that to go on. So Ruben combined the logo with that illustration and Jeff Gillum's narrative of what the goblin idol would look like. So then you had those artistic influence all coming together. And from there, Joe took all of that and created the idol that's now our finished piece. So this is actually a collaboration from about four or five different beautiful artistic minds. So It's not only a brilliant statue, it's a great example of creative teamwork and input. And, you know, to get all of these people to collaborate on this was just phenomenal to see come together.
That was pretty very amazing.
Cool. Yeah.
That's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah. This is going to be a fun one to watch.
Uh-huh.
And are you thinking of doing a Kickstarter for each individual book that you come across? You mentioned that the New Orleans book is probably going to get a Kickstarter later, too.
Yeah. It seems that that's the way the industry wants it to go now. It's feeling like the fans want more involvement. They want to be part of the creative process. They want to pick and choose what books get made and what books don't. So more and more, I think Kickstarter is going to be a major part of our industry, just so that the fans can be driving the bus and not the companies. And as a fan first, I don't really know that I mind that. If my project doesn't have the interest and support of the fan base, maybe I shouldn't be doing it anyway. And it's seeming like now that there are projects that come out that aren't Kickstarter, that they're not as successful as the Kickstarter projects, just because the fans didn't have a say, they weren't as exposed, they don't know what to expect. When you're part of a Kickstarter campaign, you're getting updates, you're getting sneak previews, you're getting special perks. You are part of it. It's kind of like being a fan of that band that nobody knows about.
Mm-hmm.
And those are some of the most diehard, rabid fans. So, for the foreseeable future, this book and definitely the next one, we're going to be using Kickstarter. After that, we'll see how the industry is evolving, and we're going to try and stay on top of the curve.
Awesome. Kind of a follow up to that, then. Now that this is fully funded, and after the Kickstarter, will the book be available print on demand, or will it be, you know, stocked in our local game stores, or how's the distribution?
We're going to get everyone who ordered it order a physical copy. We are going to have it available on our website. A number of them will be available on the Chaosium website as well. So once it's funded, it will be out there. Of course, that does not include the special PDF that's available only to backers of the Kickstarter, which includes a mystery scenario that the backers get to vote on. You get to vote on the topic, the setting, you know, basically the setting, the author, the antagonist, and the objective, which should be phenomenal. I can't wait to see actually what gets chosen. We've got some great authors lined up, and whoever the fans want to see, they will get. That PDF will only be available to our backers.
That's awesome. That's the great thing with the Kickstarter is you can find the fans that want to invest at certain levels. They can partake and get these kinds of bonuses, and I think that's awesome.
Oh, and also to add, if I may, our one of our Kickstarter goals is called a further mystery, which we will add a second mystery scenario to that PDF. Basically, all the second place votes, that scenario and that author will also be included. So if we hit enough stretch goals, there may be a PDF with two scenarios voted on by the fans. And that's, again, only available through supporters and backers of the Kickstarter.
Very cool.
Excellent. So when this drops, we'll have a little more than 2 weeks left to your to the Kickstarter, and I think it's going to be fantastic.
Well, thanks. We're all hopeful.
Thank you for coming on the show today, Oscar.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I really had a great time.
Yeah, so did we.
Very good talking to you.
Awesome.
Okay, take care, guys.
We'd love to hear from our listeners, and we've got a lot of different ways for you guys to get in touch with us. Our main contact email address is feedback@mu-podcast.com. We also have a Twitter account @MU_podcast.
We have a Providence, Rhode Island voicemail number at area code 401-400-0MUP. That's 401-400-0687. Ask a question, leave us a line, or say who you are, and I'm enrolled at the Miskatonic University podcast. And give us a hearty Go Pods for our home team, the Fighting Cephalopods. We also have a Send Us a Voicemail tab on the right-hand side of the website. You can leave us a voicemail message with your computer or iOS device.
Our website is www.mu-podcast.com, and you can find our show notes for this episode at mu-podcast.com/31. That's the number 31.
Our forums are at mu-podcast.com/campus, so please join us over there and join in the conversation. We also have a thread in the Yog-Sothoth forums in the Mythophonia section.
And sign up for the show on iTunes. You can also use the RSS feed found on the website. You can also chat up with Murph, usually only, on the IRS channel at @MiskatonicU on Freenode.
And if you've got any news or event you want to share, go to mu-podcast.com/guest to be a guest poster on the website. And please join up on the email list at mu-podcast.com/list. Thank you for joining us for another episode. Class is dismissed. The Call of Cthulhu role-playing game is property of Chaosium, Inc. The written works of H.P. Lovecraft are held in the United States public domain. All other works mentioned in this podcast are the property of their respective owners. Original content of this show is copyright of the Miskatonic University Podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. The Call of Cthulhu role-playing game is property of Chaosium, Inc.
The written works of H.P. Lovecraft are held in the United States public domain. All other works mentioned in this podcast are the property of their respective owners. Original content of this show is copyright of the Miskatonic University Podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license.
Well, that was nice. We got Merce consumption in the end there.
Yeah, well, I'm amazed. I'm utterly amazed I kept it together long enough for that. So I'm losing attack of the allergies 2013. That's basically all it is.